In his honor and the honor of Krishnamacharya and Desikachar, we'll begin our invocation from the tradition. So I request you to come with your hands at the heart center, focusing on the breath, offering our prayers and gratitude for this lineage that we can partake today virtually. Yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya cha vaityakena yopakarottam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi abahu purushakaram shankha chakrasidharinam sahastra shirsam shvetam pranamami patanjalim hari om. Okay, I will take this time to formally introduce Gary. A warm welcome and a humble pranam to Gary and each of you. Our topic today is yoga for managing the stress response. An hour is not enough. We can be here for hours listening to him. But here is the formal introduction. So Gary Krafstor has been a pioneer in the transmission of yoga for health, healing, and personal transformation for over 40 years. He began his study of yoga in India with T.K.V. Desikachar in 1974 and received a Vini Yoga Special Diploma from Vini Yoga International in Paris, France in 1988. In 1999, he founded the American Vini Yoga Institute, LLC. Since then, he has been a renowned speaker and teacher of Vini Yoga methodology at many conferences and schools nationally and internationally. Gary has successfully developed protocol for two NIH studies evaluating yoga for chronic low back pain and yoga therapy for generalized anxiety, as well as for mind-body stress reduction in workplace. Clinical trial for Aetna Insurance Company. This is a big breakthrough, and as a physician, I really acknowledge this to be a wealth of resources for so many people suffering from these conditions. He's the director and senior teacher of American Vini Yoga Institute, the author of two books published by Penguin, Yoga for Wellness and Yoga for Transformation, and author for many educational DVDs. He has also produced several online workshops, Pranayam Unlocked, Meditation Unlocked, Yoga Therapy for Depression, Yoga Therapy for Better Sleep, Yoga Therapy for Anxiety, and Asana Unlocked. These are some of his offerings. Of course, you can explore more on his website. If I have to talk with him, this can go on for a long time, but I rather have listened from him. So from I Do Yoga virtual platform, again, welcome all of you. This is our Seva International community project, and this is our seventh year celebrating International Day of Yoga in San Antonio. We've done first 5 years in person, last year, and today is virtual. In traditional method, before we learn from a teacher, a patrata is checked, right? If I am a vessel, even good enough to imbibe this knowledge or prepared to imbibe this knowledge, your teacher would first test you and then only give you some of this knowledge, which leads to freedom. But here we are blessed that experienced teacher like Gary, and that have already learned straight from Krishnamacharya and Desikachar, who are willing to come virtually and give some of these precious studies that they have not only learned, but digested and practiced in their life and share with us. So with that, warm welcome, Gary.
Thank you so much. I'm sincerely honored to be a part of this. I really didn't know much about it until, and here I am. So I feel like it's always just a blessing, and that my life is guided, and I find myself in the places I'm supposed to be. So I'm very happy to see all of you, and I'm even surprised and extra happy to see some friends that I just haven't seen in a long, long time. And so thank you all for being here. And we, and those of you who know me know that I can just go on and on and on. And so I'll try to be efficient and specific. When Robin, who is sort of our director of operations at ABI, spoke, and you guys organized for what you know what I would do, it was something in relation to managing the stress response. And I think it's a really useful and appropriate topic, especially considering the past 2 years or 4 years or 8 years or decades of stress in life that we all go through. But it's been particularly brought to the forefront with the COVID lockdown. And so I'm going to just start to share some things, and it will, I'll talk probably for 20, 25 minutes. Then we'll take maybe a little short break. And I don't know if there's a little time for 5 minutes of Q&A or 10 minutes, and then we'll do some little practical experience that we'll share with you an example of what I talked about. And then maybe we'll have some short time at the very end to share, if that sounds all right with you. And I've been I asked if I should do a little introduction, and Hetal said yes, of course. And, you know, I won't say much about me. It's that I met these guys, and you already heard from the introduction, back in 1974, I traveled to, back then it was called Madras, it may have now changed the name to Chennai. And I went with actually some students and friends, and one of the people I went with, his wife happens to be here, nice to see you, Andy, way back in 1974. And I was in a group of music students. I was a religious studies student, but they were doing music, and I went to meet Deskachar and Krishnamacharya, and also to do coursework in Shaivite Siddhanta, which is a South Indian tantric lineage of Shaivism. So I was doing the academic study of religion. I was interested in Upanishads, and I was a gymnast in high school. So I wasn't overly interested in asana. I thought it was kind of cool, but I kind of thought that I already understood it, which isn't the truth. Back then, I learned that there was much more about asana that I didn't have any idea about. But I really went because I was interested in the nature of yogic teachings in relation to the mind and the transformation of mind. One of the things that I learned when I was there, and I lived there on and off over about 4 years, and that's from 1974 until the last time I was in Madras, which was in about 2000, I think. I went back to India again, but not to Madras, in 2012. So I was there every year from 1974 just to about 2000 with a few gaps. And then I went only once since then in 2012. So that's an interesting reality about change. But one of the things that I learned right away is that yoga is multidimensional. It's not a one sort of trick pony. It's not one note in that symphony of possibilities, as they like to say. It's a multidimensional science because it's designed to address us as human beings at a multidimensional level. And a lot in the West have reduced yoga to tapas. Actually, in the Gita tradition, is a great teaching about the three components. They call it the Trikarma, the three paths of yoga that are essential for us to fulfill in order to live a fulfilled life. And they are yajna, dana, and tapas. I won't spend a lot of time in that, of course. But yajna is kind of like, we think of it as the dharma that we owe to the universe and the divine and maybe nature. And dana is the dharma that we owe to each other and our society and our families. And tapas is the dharma that we owe to ourselves, to take care of ourselves. So in the West, of course, we've reduced yoga to tapas, and we've reduced tapas to asana. I used to joke long ago at the Yoga Journal conferences, that's a thing of the past, of course. You know, if you really want to know the secrets of yoga, it's really about stretching your hamstrings, because people have reduced yoga to asana, asana to stretching, And really what's most important is stretches your hamstrings. Obviously I'm making a joke. But there's something, our structure is important. And asana is a great science that can help us manage our condition as we move through time and space, dealing with gravity and dealing with lockdown. And I don't know if it's only me that is sitting far too much, more than I even used to sit because of lockdown. So I think you know what I mean, in our low back and our neck and shoulders. And asana is a great tool. It's not only about that, of course, but it's a master tool for that. But you know, what our tradition says is that once you've reached this, finished the sunrise stage of life, which is looking around this room, it means it's already happened for all of us. First 25 or 30 years of life, you know, actually it's more important that we begin to attune, not that our spine isn't important, our structure isn't important, but it's very important that we begin to develop a conscious or refine our conscious relationship to our physiology, to our autonomic nervous system. And via our autonomic nervous system, the rest of our physiology. And then it's not only important that we kind of learn to manage our physiology, but that we begin to understand that it's our responsibility to manage our changing emotional states. And it's our responsibility to become critically self-conscious of our narrative, the dialogue or the story we're telling ourselves about ourselves and the world around us. And to really begin to do the deeper inner work of servicing our patterns so that we can become free. Even at a structural level, we have neuromuscular movement patterns that are the source of a lot of our repetitive stress injury. Asana is a field for doing neuromuscular re-education. With stress, our body has a pattern of response to stress, that the mechanism of that response is the autonomic nervous system and patterns of sympathetic, parasympathetic dysregulation. In our minds, it's our emotional and reactive patterns. And in our cognitive minds, which is the field in which we create our own self-definition and define our understanding of ourselves in relation to our world, and also set our direction for our future. That's the foundation of our action and behavior. We have dysfunctional patterns. We believe in stories rather than seeing what's true about us and about everything, about the world around us. And then we have habitual behavioral patterns. And some of them are dysfunctional and some of them are even addictive. So this whole field of yoga is about becoming critically self-conscious of our patterns at a multidimensional level and applying the tools of practice so that we can transform dysfunctional patterns and ultimately become free. And so that's a kind of broad introduction to the way that we approach this practice. And specific topic of tonight's discussion is about the autonomic nervous system and then how to manage it. So the autonomic nervous system is Western physiological term that describes the structure and function of a real part of our body. The autonomic nervous system regulates all of the unconscious physiological processes in the body. You know, so our respiration, our heartbeat, our digestion, our endocrine system, our reproductive system, all of those, and also the unconscious things like sneezing and blinking and coughing and all that. These are all regulated by the autonomic nervous system. So it's important. I used to joke with people, I don't think I said that already, what's more important, your hamstrings or your liver? To the yoga community that's obsessed with asana, and you know, all respects to the hamstrings, I think most of us would realize that ultimately, in terms of our longevity and well-being, the condition of our liver is at least as important, if not more important, than our hamstring. And, you know, the corollary question is, what's more important, our liver or our attitude? And actually, all are important. But the thing that we want to focus on now is, what's that yogic science for managing stress? And actually, interesting to know, in my work as a yoga therapist, I've learned from a lot of students who were pharmacologists who taught me that a big percentage, the vast majority of the pharmaceuticals that are prescribed for managing symptoms of chronic disease are sympathetic, parasympathetic activators. And the Vedic model of Brahmana Langana Samana, I put that in the chat so you can see the sort of accurate transliteration and understand the words I'm talking about. That's a paradigm that comes from Ayurveda and yoga and yoga therapy, which is a treatment paradigm for managing or changing the condition of the autonomic nervous system. Sort of a reductionism of it. You know, part of my job is bringing this ancient teachings and making it accessible in the context of modern Western science and even healthcare. So I don't want to reduce Brahmadalanga and Samana just to treatment paradigms for the autonomic nervous system, but for the sake of our discussion, you know, and there are other paradigms like Surya and Chandra, which is a sun and moon, which is at the root of Hatha yoga, actually. And it's an important paradigm to understand also in yoga therapy. So heating and cooling. But Brahmadalanga and Samana is what I'm going to introduce now. That's a little bit different pattern. There's other paradigms as well, like stimulate and sedate. So there's lots of paradigms that come out of this yoga therapy and Ayurvedic tradition that are treatment paradigms, but they're all about helping us understand ourselves and manage our condition as we move through time and space. Are you guys following what I'm saying? So I think it's really useful to think about Brahmadalanga and Samana and these ideas, which are present in particularly in yoga therapy and textually also in Ayurveda, some of the source Ayurvedic texts. Both traditions, Ayurveda and yoga, emerge or take their metaphysical roots in Sankhya's metaphysics of Kapila Sankhya. And the origin of the Brahmadalanga Samana paradigm is the Triguna, Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, that are the constituents of Prakriti in the sort of metaphysical dualism of Purusha Prakriti. Are you guys, I don't know, I don't want to take too much time explaining that, but that idea of gunas is the root of the theory of Brahmadalanga and Samana. So I'll just talk about the words for a moment, and you can see the first word is, my Sanskrit pronunciation is American, Brahmana, which is cognate, I mean, the same etymological root, rather, not cognate, but the Br is the etymological root, B-R-H, which is also the root of Brahma, which is the creator God, you know, that exists at the Sukshma Sharira plane, but it's also Brahman, which is the totality that is existing at the Karana Sharira. And it's even the root of the Brahmin, you know, which is the caste of people or even a priest that exists at the Stula Sharira level. So that root pervades, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, the tree, the Triya Sharira, the triple body theory. All of these symbol systems form the basis of this yoga. So a deeper understanding of it requires a kind of a deeper study into these symbol systems to understand their implication in our lives. But so Brahmana comes from that root Bra. Like I said, Brahma is creator. So you think of the word expand. And then in therapy, it means to build. It means also to nourish, to strengthen, to nourish, to build. Doesn't exactly mean to energize, but when you have vital, when you eat nutrient-rich food, it energizes your system. If you drink a triple espresso, that's not energizing exactly, that's stimulating. It's important to understand that stimulants are useful in yoga therapy, but more important than stimulant is a nourishment. So Brahman is really about nourishment, although we do use techniques that are designed to stimulate your system as well. But I'm not talking about that now, I'm talking about nourishing. So that's Brahmana. Langana on the other side comes from that Sanskrit word laghu, and laghu means light. But when I say that, you know, light is such an important word in yoga and in yoga therapy. Light as jyoti, light as opposed to dark, is a symbol of consciousness itself. Atman is chid jyoti, the light of pure awareness. So light, that light as opposed to darkness, is a very important symbol system in yoga. But in yoga therapy, light as opposed to heavy, laghu means light like cotton, to make light. And langana and as a therapy means to eliminate, to purify, to reduce. So if we think about a stress, there's agitation in the nervous system. Langana means to sedate sympathetic overactivation. It's a strategy for engaging parasympathetic response. Brahmanin is not about sedating parasympathetic response, but it's about activating the nervous system in a way that maintains sympathetic parasympathetic balance. And then that word samana means actually to bring balance. The root sama means equal or balanced. So if you're recovering from chronic fatigue and you're exhausted, or you just made a big 3-hour drive and there was a lot of traffic and there was stress and you're both agitated and exhausted, you have to manage your system. So if you're just suffering from chronic fatigue and you want to regain your energy, that's Brahmana therapy. You want to use practices that build your energy, that strengthen your system, that nourish you and help you regain your vitality. If you're stressed and agitated and you're losing sleep, then you want Langana therapy to kind of calm your system, reduce the excessive agitation and engage parasympathetic response. Does that make sense to you guys? So if you want to reduce it to something simple, it's like, and not even in therapeutic context, let's say you wake up in the morning and you have, you know, you wish you had more hours of sleep, but you have to do you have to do some kind of work. You don't have energy. You want to wake up and gradually build your energy and get, not only take a triple espresso and stimulate, but you want to build your energies that can last you throughout your day. So then you want Brahmana. I'll talk about how to create Brahmana. Let's say you've worked all day, you're a little agitated, your system's enervated, you need some rest, and yet you're agitated, you need Langana. You need to be able to calm down so you can have a good night's sleep. Does that make sense? I'm trying to make it really simple. So how do you create Brahmana and Langana? Or I'll talk about Samana in a moment. You can do it through movement. You most important method is through breathing. But even movements themselves, asanas are not just about your structure, they also influence your energy. So if I wake up in the morning and I want Brahmana, I'm not going to do long seated forward bends. I may use a seated forward bend, but really what I want to do is move towards standing postures and big back bends. Like a great symbol of Brahmana is the great posture Virabhadrasana. Virabhadra was a warrior in Mahabharata, so Virabhadra was a great warrior. So Virabhadrasana, which is the standing back bend where your chest is expanded and you're open, is a wake-up posture. Does it make sense to you? If you want to, you know, it's evening, you don't want to do Virabhadrasana. You want to do like a supine, lie on your back, Jatara Parivritti, a simple twist, and then maybe a seated forward bend or lying on your back and doing a longer Shavasana. You know, so those are more Langana. So the idea is that you can use certain kinds of movements to already influence your energy. But the most important way in which we're trained that you can influence, that you can actually develop a conscious relationship to your own autonomic nervous system and be able through that awareness to attune to what's happening in your own sympathetic parasympathetic system and then apply the appropriate technique to bring yourself back to balance. The main tool is the breath. So the breathing, classically, of course, taking energy in, taking air in, what happens when you inhale to your lungs? They expand. What happens when your lungs expand to your chest? It expands. So by definition, Brahmana means expansion. So inhale is energetically Brahmana. So beginning to lengthen your inhale, focusing on back bends, lengthening your inhale, even holding the breath in after inhale is going to leave you more awake, more energized. That's Brahmana. If you have chronic fatigue syndrome, you want to move progressively towards Brahmana so you regain your energy and you'll use some stronger in time. You'll progressively move so that you can do a standing posture like Virabhadrasana, progressively lengthening your inhale and holding the breath after inhale for a few seconds. At the end of the inhale, that's going to lift your energy and be more Brahmana. The other side of the paradigm, you're stressed and you want to calm down, you need Langana. So the number one tool for Langana is lengthening exhalation. Progressively lengthening the exhalation will actually calm an agitated sympathetic nervous system and then help you engage parasympathetic response. So just doing simple postures on exhale, like simple twists and forward bends and lengthening the exhale is already going to calm your system. But then if you're sitting and doing pranayama, understanding how to, forgive this word, manipulate the relationship between inhale and exhale, and how to selectively and calibrate it to your own system, use retention of the breath in after inhale or suspension of the breath out after exhale, can give you an ability to change what's happening in your own sympathetic parasympathetic balance. So that's an important tool. In addition to movement and breathing, chanting is used traditionally. Also, for other reasons related to emotions and the mind and the narrative, but in relation to your sympathetic parasympathetic balance, there are teachings that flow through Krishnamacharya's lineage about how to modulate pitch, particularly pitch, svara, and volume, balam. You know, there's an ancient chant, Shik Sham Dhyā Kya Sya Maha Parna Svaraha Matra Balam Sama Santanaha. There are actually seven categories. We won't go into them now, but manipulating or changing the volume, the pitch, can influence your energy in the same way that breath can. So movement, breathing, and chanting are all tools that we can learn. And also you have other tools, like drinking chamomile tea is a langana in the evening, or if you're really stressed, some valerian, put a little valerian in your tea. You know what I'm talking about? That's an herbal remedy. Caffeine in the morning. Now it's not brahmana. What is caffeine in the morning? It's a stimulant. But I'll bet some of you have heard about bulletproof coffee. Has anybody heard about bulletproof? I know they're there in Austin. But you know, well, okay, so if you haven't heard of it, I'll explain it in a minute. If you heard about Tibetan tea, they made tea with yak butter because they needed healthy fats and it was like food. So this guy named, whatever his name is, I'm having a senior moment forgetting his name, but anyway, he created this company called Bulletproof Coffee, and there's little centers in Austin, I remember them, where you can go and they take butter, grass-fed butter, unsalted butter, and then they make a coffee drink. And so you get the stimulant, but you also get the nourishment. So, but what I'm suggesting is it's also through food in Ayurveda, through food and herbs, you can influence what's happening in your energy system. So when you're looking holistically in the yoga science, it's not just movement, it includes breathing, it's not just breathing, it can include chanting, it's not just chanting, it's what you eat, and then it's more. Meditation can, you can use meditative objects of meditation that will be more activating or more peaceful and more sedating. In fact, even in Devata Yoga, they have the images of wrathful, semi-wrathful, and peaceful deities. And they are much more, they're much more than managing your autonomic nervous system, but that influences your autonomic nervous system as well. So I just wanted to introduce you to these ideas that yoga is not just about your structure. I know that everybody here knows that. That yoga is also about your structure, your anatomy, your functional anatomy, but it's also, and it's about transforming dysfunctional patterns, samskaras, dysfunctional movement patterns, so that you can bring more integrity into your structure. It's also about your physiology. And it's about understanding that you can learn to attune to what's happening in sympathetic, parasympathetic dysregulation, which is in most illnesses, there's a state of sympathetic, parasympathetic dysregulation. In fact, sympathetic, parasympathetic dysregulation is a symptom of any kind of illness, but it's also a causal factor in many illnesses and a contributing factor in most conditions and a complicating factor in healing them. So you have a great opportunity to gain control over your own sympathetic parasympathetic balance through applying these tools. And then it's not only about your physiology, it's also about your emotions and transforming troubling dysfunctional emotions. We thought about doing something on anxiety, but it's too complicated. So I'm just introducing you to that idea. But our work is very effective in helping people manage anxiety or transform depression. Of course, depending upon the root causes. Sometimes you need to be in cooperation with licensed mental health care provider, of course, but there's tremendous work that we do in yoga. In fact, we would say the proper field of yoga is the mind, and therefore the proper field of yoga therapy is mental health. And that's a longer discussion, but it's our job and responsibility when we're ready to take responsibility for our own condition, which is the starting point in any yogic process, to gain mastery over our own minds, which means our emotions, and even more importantly, our stories, our narratives. Most of us are suffering from groupthink and cognitive biases that we're not even fully conscious of. The last couple of political seasons have really brought to the forefront how plugged in people into their art, to their stories and their narratives. That's one of the fundamental teachings of yoga, to realize that you're not your story. And the people around you are not the story you're telling yourself about them, your mate, your mother, your kid. Even your political leaders are not who you're telling yourself they are. This is the narrative. So yoga is about all of this. And, you know, it's hard for me, you know, since this is like introduction to Vinaya Yoga, I wanted you to feel the spectrum of it. And again, my teacher said that my responsibility is to understand myself at a multidimensional level, to understand how these tools function, and to be able to adapt and calibrate the tools so that I can work to transform my condition by surfacing the dysfunctional patterns at whatever level they are, and then applying the technology to create new and more functional patterns. And that's a kind of broader sort of look at the way I was trained in yoga. And then I'm going to teach you something about breathing. So let me pause here before we do a practice. And before I say some things about breathing, before I guide a simple practice, just, is there any comments or questions? Am I making sense to you guys? That means I can't hear. And I'm assuming that I can't assume anything. But since I'm not here, there you go. Thank you, Susana. Nice to see you again, and Nia. And I see all my friends here. So I know that you guys, those who I know that you know what I'm talking about.
I have a comment for a question for you, Gary. It seems like this breathing that I understand to be pranayama ratios has become really commodified by non-yoga lineage practitioners. Like they'll call it box breath, or they'll even have these different names for it. I wondered what your opinions are, because it seems like the techniques work even pulled out of a lineage or pulled out of a whole system. And they're not even calling it pranayama or ujjayi breath, so to say. So I wondered what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, and thank you for the question. So I'll say a couple of things. First of all, I try to empty myself as best as I can on an ongoing basis of my opinions and attitudes. So I mean, when I began this teaching, you know, and some of you know this about me, but as it manifests in my adult life, but you may or may not, some of you have heard this story. My mom kept the baby book when I was a little boy. And according to my mother's baby book, my first sentence was, "Shut up your stupid head." And so you can see terms of samskara that I've been carrying from past lives or something. It's taken me a long time to mature and recognize that everybody understands what they understand at the level they understand it, and to be less judgmental, more tolerant, and more open. But it's taken a long time to not only have that idea, but it to be actually how I feel, really. So, you know, the fact that people are out there teaching people how to use their breath in some conscious way, to me, is a benefit. However, there's some risk to certain parts of the breath. Like, for example, there's a common misunderstanding that pranayama is inhale 8, hold 32, exhale 16. That ratio existed as a hatha yoga ratio, but because you use the word commodification, and let me add plus marketing, that ratio has become identified with pranayama practice, and that is a risky ratio. In fact, according to Krishnamacharya, it's contraindicated, not for every human being, it's initiatory and should not be taught in public. So as much as I like to be open, there are some things that I think are risky that shouldn't be out there. And forgive me, my Indian friends, but some of you know about a famous Indian teaching pranayama on television. I told one of my Indian students, an older man, who's also a doctor, who also suffered from emphysema, that when he went back to visit his family, and when he wrote me, I said, don't do that, it's wrong. It's not a good system. He ended up in big trouble because of that. So there are things that have become commercialized that are riskier. This safety valve is that most people won't practice it anyway. You know what I mean? I used to joke with people, the reason pranayama is not dangerous is because you're not going to practice it. Because it takes patience and commitment and dedication, and it's kind of boring until you've understood it. So what I would say is that the commodification of this stuff, I mean, look what Maharishi did. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi took a profound science of mantra and reduced it to something simple. And it, in one sense, it does a disservice to the depth and profound nature of mantra japa. On the other hand, he touched thousands or tens of thousands or maybe even more people in a positive way. So a certain degree of commodification, if it gets it out there and starts waking people up about the power of these tools, I think is useful. Box breathing is relatively benign as long as you don't push that retention after inhale. That's risky. And, you know, it's just what's happening. And my ultimate answer to that is that this tradition is thousands of years old. It will out-survive us. You know, if we've reduced yoga to asana and asana to stretching and stretching to hamstrings, that's an old joke of mine. The secret teachings of yoga is stretching your hamstrings. I mean, people really believe that in America. I mean, not now, but, you know, 20 years ago when I was teaching a yoga journal, that's what they thought. And I said in a keynote there, from the way I was taught, it's more important to heal your relationship with your mother than stretch your hamstrings. And you guys know the story. When I got home from that keynote, I got a letter from Yoga Journal. I swear this is God's truth. Asking me if I would help them write an article on how to stretch the hamstrings. Because they still, you know, they just, we hear what we want to hear. We have our cognitive bias. So that's the real work of yoga, to free our minds. That's the real deep work of yoga. But along the way, we can learn these tools to gain an ability to influence our autonomic nervous system, which will keep us in a much more stable balance so that we can develop a clear mind and do the deep inner work of transforming these samskaras. No, I'm not saying not to do alternate nostril breathing, but alternate nostril breathing is largely misunderstood. Ratio. So 1-4-2 is a dangerous ratio, according to Krishnamacharya, for public consumption. Ratio is the science of proportional relationship between the length of inhale, the length of holding the breath in after inhale, we call antakumbhaka. I use American English retention of the breath in, the length of exhale, and the length of suspending the breath out after exhale. I use the word suspension for bahya kumbhaka. So there's a science of different combinations to produce different effects. Then another thing is the techniques, like that discussion of Surya and Chandra is related to the valving at the nostril. It's called svara. But that nostril breathing is largely misunderstood. Not in a dangerous way, just in a way that prevents people from getting the full benefit of it. If you've seen people do Nadi Shodhana like this, seal the right, inhale left, then seal the left, exhale right, then inhale right, then seal the right and exhale left. That is looks how people practice it, but they're missing the valve. And they just don't know what they don't know because they haven't been initiated. This is initiatory science. So that nostril techniques require a valve. So this, if I do Nadi Shodhana in the traditional way, my right nostril is sealed and my left nostril is valved up here at the bone cartilage. Then watch how I subtly switch my fingers. Now I'm exhaling right. Now I'm inhaling right. Now I subtly shift the fingers and now valving left. So in all respects to, you know, your tradition, hey Tal, the first American who taught that was a friend of mine. That's how he did Nadi Shodhana, with one sealed, the other open, and then he used Ujjayi. There's no Ujjayi when you're doing Nadi Shodhana. There's a valve at the nostril. It's one is sealed, the other is valved, and that's the power of the technique. You're stimulating on inhale or sedating on exhale. So inhale stimulates the nadi, exhale sedates the nadi. And that's what anuloma viloma means, actually. It's related to the, it's even biologically related to the cilia. The cilia go out like this, it's a filtering system. So when you inhale through the left nostril, you're stimulating the chandra nadi. When you exhale through the right nostril, you're sedating the surya nadi. It's a whole teaching that people haven't received. So they just make up, sorry. There's my old samskara. Can I use a bad four-letter word? People in America like to make shit up and then put themselves up as authorities. I feel like this, and you'll appreciate this, Hetal. Desikachar said that his father grew a huge apple tree. He picked one apple, ate part of it, and gave a little bit to us. If you get the image, there's so much knowledge in this lineage, you know, and some of you who know me, I'm building these courses on this online. I'm just trying to catalog all the things that I've received, and I've only received a little, maybe more than most of the Western students of this lineage, but compared to what there is. And I think about what Desikachar knew, and Desikachar said to me, I know so little compared to what Father knew. But the key is that it becomes alive and authentic in your own experience. And then those of us who've received it have a dharma to share it so that it doesn't die, it passes on generationally. Okay, I see I told you I can just talk too much, I apologize. Let's see if there's anything else, and then I'll just maybe guide a breathing experience. Yes, please.
Gary, I have one question. You were talking about yajna, dana, tapas
yes.
from Bhagavad Gita. Would you mind providing some more details on that? I know you said in relation
sure.
with the nature, in relation with others and the self.
Yes, well, I said sure, but I guess I meant, no, of course not, I wouldn't mind. I'd be honored and happy to. So, you know, there's three words, and this is tri karma. And Gita is a great source of yoga teaching, of course. You know, the main text that I've taught in our training programs is the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, and a little bit from Mandukya Upanishad and some Taittiriya Upanishad. But actually, according to Krishnamacharya, Patanjali and Gita were the main yogic sources. And in Gita, they use the phrase tri karma to refer to yajna, dana, and tapas. And you know, actually the context, and I was teaching this morning in this Antikrama course that I started, the context of this teaching is Sanatana Dharma, which is the universal principles. And then Purushartha is how to live a fulfilled life. And a meaningful life. And then discovering one's Svadharma, you know, how you want to manifest that in your own life. But all of us have received this gift of life. And with this gift of life comes some responsibility. And yajna comes from that root yaj, and it kind of means to worship. But it is really, traditionally yajna was sacrificial rituals by which the practitioner participates in this cosmic cycle of birth, growth, you know, maintenance, and then decline, and then death. It's this ongoing cycle of birth, life, and death that we're a part of. And yajna is our participation in that whole ritual. And it was considered a duty that we owe to the divine. And in modern India, there's yajna is part of the movement of environmentalism, is pulling on yajna. So it's not only taking care of the divine, that means the sukshma and karana shariras, but also the broader sort of physical environment that we live in. So yajna is this appreciation and gratitude for and taking care of the universe, the physical environment, the divine. Then dana means to give, and it means that charitable disposition towards all living beings, and that sort of selfless orientation in the service of others. And it can be that it's involved with individuals, helping others, or it can be taking care of animals. You know, I have a friend in North who lives in North India who's all about the dogs and taking care of the abused dogs in New Delhi. I mean, that's part of his dana. Whatever you do that gives back to uplift society, that's considered part of dharma. We have even, you know, in the traditional religions, it's tithing to the church or to the temple, but it can be contributing to Greenpeace or, I don't know, you know, whatever particular charitable organization that you believe in. It just means, or helping others, you know, giving to the food bank or donating your books to the prisons, or I don't know, there's all kinds of ways that can manifest dana. And then tapas is the inner work that we do for purification of body, speech, and mind. That's classic idea, body, speech, and mind. Is that kind of giving an answer to your question?
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much.
It's my honor. And you know, what Krishnamacharya said, it comes from Gita. Remember, there's a thing in Gita, I don't remember the exact quote, but better something like a half a life lived swadharma than a full life paradharma. So it's important that we sort of understand that it's not our job to follow somebody else. Like, you know, if somebody else is doing social activism, you know, you shouldn't feel guilty that you're not called to do that. You're called to do what you're called to do. It has to be your own way of manifesting these things. It's not, don't let anybody else shame or blame you for not doing what they think you should do. It's about you uncovering what's yours to do. And that's true at tapas level. That asana that you do is for your body. It's not about what the posture looks like. None of these tools are about the tools. All of these tools are about the practitioner. And it's the job of the practitioner to learn how to use them so they are they're transformational for them authentically. It's not just imitating somebody else. I hope that's clear.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, you have to balance all these three things. Or probably first you purify the mind body to, you know, get to the next level, dana, and then yajna.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing. And again, it's a matter, I would say, of svadharma. Here's the thing. Let me answer. And is it okay if we don't do a practice? Because I'm looking at the clock. I mean, so let me answer. I think this is a very important question. Because it again points to svadharma. So let me back off it and come back to it in just a different way. So you have somebody that has depression, who has a low back pain, who has emphysema. Let me start over again. They have depression, situational depression, because somebody they love just died. So they're in grief. They have a low back pain. They have emphysema. So that's a complex phenomenon. So how do you start? Like, do you start with the emphysema? Do you start with the back pain? Do you start with the grief? Well, it depends. You want to start in whatever door you can access. Once you begin to influence the direction of change, the whole thing unfolds. So there's not a right way to where to begin. It's whatever doorway you can walk through, what's accessible to that individual, and that varies from individual to individual. So theoretically, you might start with tapas and then go to dana and then yajna, but actually somebody, like when I was a little kid, who knows why, I was interested in what the meaning of life was. I used to ask my parents about death. It freaked them out. You know, I was interested in religion. I was a young kid going through Colgate, you know, with my friends and not even studying. And I was a straight A student because I seemed to know this stuff already. So I started yoga from an interest in religion, not from an interest in exercise. You know, so for me, I was interested in going to God. And my teacher said, actually, Krishnamacharya said, in this yuga, nivritti is not the path. Pravritti is the path. Redirect your orientation towards being in the world and doing something useful. I always thought I was going to the mountain, right? So the answer is it depends. It can be for somebody, there can be a 70-year-old that all he cares about is his golf swing and a 20-year-old who wants to join the priesthood. So you really have to see where someone's at, but ultimately all three need to be taken care of according to the tradition. That was a long answer. I hope that's okay, but I just want to, again, reiterate that there's no, it depends. It has to be adapted. And that's one of Krishnamacharya's gifts of teaching us how to understand a person where they are adapt the tools and calibrate them so they meet that person where they are and help them begin to move and transform.
Thank you so much, Gary. This is very profound and very insightful answer. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm honored. So we have 10 minutes. Let me do a little breathing with you guys. How about that?
Sure, Gary, let me just make sure there's no questions and then we can, yes. Please, Gary, go ahead.
Can I just want to do one breathing technique with you, looking at the time and respecting, you know, the timing and everything. And since I gave a provocative statement that most people do not understand correctly how to use the valving. So let me show you. Can you take your, so this is secondary. This is called Mrigi Mudra, but it isn't as important. Here's another thing that they do. Besides that, they seal one and leave the other open, they poke themselves in their third eye. I'm saying that provocatively, intentionally. Nothing wrong with that. Excepting that if you don't want to focus on the Ajna chakra, suppose you want to focus on the Nabhi chakra or the heart. This is focusing your attention there, but most of us shouldn't be focusing our attention there. Anyway, it's better to go lower. That's another discussion. So the mudra is this, but what's important, that is I take my index and middle finger and fold it under the pad of my thumb, then my ring and pinky are together. And then I'm using the pad of my thumb and my ring finger to do the valves. So the seal, I'm exaggerating. The seal is low at the nostril flap. The valve is high at the cartilage. And so if you are inhaling or here, let me show you, because I'll teach Anuloma now. If I'm exhaling left, you see that's here, high, and the thumb is down. Now I'm going to inhale Ujjayi, now I'm going to exhale right. So now the seal's low, and now I'm valving up here. And I'm pressing, and then I'm going to, you know what a valve does? It restricts volume and speed of air. And so you should hear that little vibration up there, not at your throat. Okay? And then this is one other thing, because I just saw my friend Lakshmi, you know, do this. So I'm going to exaggerate, Lakshmi. You weren't doing this, but. So I elevated my right shoulder and turned my head right. So you want to make sure that your shoulders are down and your head's in the center, even though you're using your right arm, your head is balanced. There's no work here. My shoulders are relaxed. My elbow is like sort of down towards my solar plexus and my head's in the center. Okay, so we're going to do a breathing technique and I'm going to guide it. Okay, and we'll breathe for 6 or 7 minutes and then we'll take 2 minutes to dishare. So here's how we'll do it. Just come to a comfortable, it doesn't matter what your chair is perfect, but what you should do is sit up straight. And I'm going to guide your awareness now for a moment. So sit up straight and let your eyes gently begin to close. And just internalize your attention and pay attention to your attention itself. And notice the habits of your
attention. Outside of you.
Was that a message to me or is that just an
I think we'll have to mute someone, Gary. So that
okay. Yeah, that's okay. So, and this is the challenge, of course, of yoga, to be focused and direct your attention without distraction, even in the midst of distraction. Right? So when you settle into your inner awareness with your eyes closed, notice your attention, the habits of attention, the rajoguna, it's distracted. Tamoguna, this time of night, it may be dull and sleepy. Look for that state of relaxed, mindful, present awareness. Take a moment and I'm going to guide your attention just before we do the breathing. Bring your attention to your sit bones in contact with the seat, whatever you're sitting on. This is pure sense. This is not a visualization. It's sensory awareness. Signals returning to your brain bring your attention to your sacrum. Just wait until you can differentiate those signals that emanate from your sacrum and return to your brain through the somatic nervous system. tune into that vibration, and then start to feel the lumbar curve. There are five vertebral segments that rise off the sacral base. Just sense your, just keep your mind inward and listen. This is a dharana pretext for focusing the mind. Walk your awareness up your lumbar, now into your thoracic. There's 12 vertebral bodies. There's the rib cage. Keep walking your awareness up your thoracic spine and sense your shoulder girdle resting on your ribs and thoracic. And then tune into those small 7 cervical vertebrae, if you can, as intimately as you're able to, that rise off of T1 and all the way up into the brainstem. And you feel the jaw and where the cervical spine meets the brain. And then bring your attention to the tip of your nose and begin to deepen your inhale and lengthen your exhale. In a moment, I'm going to guide biomechanically the way we'll control the breath for this practice. That's a longer discussion. There's different ways of controlling what we call the directional flow of breath. So I'm going to start with exhale. And so you just breathe on your own, but progressively deepen your breathing using a soft ujjayi, you know, that glottal constriction. Make your breath progressively longer until you reach a comfortable place and just hang out there. And apply these ideas, and then I'll guide you in the pranayama. This is preparation for the pranayama. So when you exhale, whether you're doing it right now or not, you can join with me when you can. You're feeling your whole belly, particularly from the pubic bone to the navel, then from the navel to the solar plexus. Feel like you're tightening your belly from the bottom up, like you're hugging your spine, tightening your abdominal rectus literally. And then as you move up, it includes the oblique and transverse abdominis. That's a little technical, but feel like you're tightening your belly from your pubic bone to your navel and then continue navel to solar plexus. And when the belly's firm, as you inhale, expand your chest first and then begin to relax the belly in the reverse order, solar plexus to navel to pubic bone. So I'm going to guide that again. As you're exhaling, tighten your belly actively, but gently and progressively tightening the muscles of your abdomen from the bottom up, pubic bone to navel, navel to solar plexus. By the end of the exhale, the whole belly is firm. When you inhale, expand the chest horizontally. And about halfway into the inhale, start to relax solar plexus to navel, navel to pubic bone. And I'll guide you that one more time, then we'll do the pranayama. So as you exhale, tighten your belly, pubic bone to navel, navel to solar plexus, so that the whole abdominal wall is firm. Holding the belly firm, inhale, expand your chest. About halfway into the inhale, begin to relax solar plexus to navel to pubic bone. So it's a slightly different pattern than maybe you've been trained in, some of you. So it's useful to be able to do that. And now you just keep doing that while I describe one more thing. I'm going to actually have you follow a ratio that I guide. We'll be breathing together and I'll tell you just what to do. And we're going to be progressively lengthening exhale and using alternate nostril exhale. So I'll guide everything. So we're going to begin now. So the way we do this is not this first inhale, but the second inhale is where we actually begin. So wherever you are in your own breath cycle right now, just inhale fully, chest to belly kind of idea. And now exhale fully and tighten your belly from the bottom up. In a moment, I'll guide and we'll begin with the next inhale, which is starting now. So inhale, take about 6 count inhale, expand your chest. A full inhale and then relax your belly. Then hold your breath, raise your right hand while you're holding after inhale. Seal your right nostril at the flap and valve your left nostril at the cartilage and exhale 6 seconds. Just 6. At the end of 6, lower your arm and inhale 6 seconds, ujjayi. Expand your chest. Relax your belly. Hold your breath after inhale, raise your hand, seal the left at the flap, and exhale 6 through a valved right nostril. Lower your hand and inhale ujjayi again. Inhale 6. We're going to keep inhale 6. Expand the chest, relax the belly. Hold the breath, raise your hand, seal the right nostril, exhale 8 counts through a valved left nostril. At the end of 8, lower your hand. Inhale, ujjayi, expand the chest, relax the belly. You're just inhaling 6. Raise your hand as you hold the breath, seal the left nostril. Exhale, 8 counts through a valved right nostril. At the end of 8, lower your hand. And once again, inhale six. When you're inhaling six, expand the chest and then relax the belly. At the end of the inhale, hold your breath, raise your hand, seal the right nostril. Exhale 10 counts through a valved left nostril. Listen to the sound. The end of 10, lower your hand. Inhale six, expand the chest, then relax the belly. At the end of six, raise your hand, seal the left. Exhale 10 counts through a valved right nostril. The end of 10, lower your hand. Inhale six, expand the chest, relax the belly, hold the breath, raise your hand, seal the right, exhale 12 counts through a valved left nostril. Feel the valve, it's not open, one's valve. At the end of 12, lower your hand and inhale six, expand the chest and then relax the belly. At the end of six, once again, raise the hand, seal the left nostril, and exhale 12 through a valved right nostril. Remember, valve it. And we're going to do one last round like that. Inhale, lower your hand with the end of the exhale. Inhale six, expand again the chest and relax the belly. The end of the inhale, raise the hand, seal the right, exhale 12, valved left nostril. And then last time, lower the hand and inhale six. And again, at the end of the inhale, hold the breath, raise your hand, seal the left and exhale 12. Through a valved right nostril. And then just release the breath and stay inwardly focused. I just wanted to respect the time. So we did five rounds, which is 10 breaths, but progressively lengthen the exhale and anuloma. Anuloma is sedating. Exhaling through the nostrils is sedating, and lengthening the exhale is langana. So even though we haven't spent a lot of time, that there was enough time that you should feel just kind of focused and still. Remember what I said, that you can create the brahmana langana or samana effect through movement, through breathing techniques in the movement and in pranayama, through chanting, also through diet and herbs, even through choices in meditation. But I wanted to introduce you to this breathing technique. And I want to thank you for your attention. And I hope that you guys have a safe rest of your journey. What I like to call the rip down the river of life until you merge with the ocean, you return to your source. And may yoga serve you on that journey. If you are interested in our work, we've put some links perhaps. You can find by vinayoga.com our information, our programs, and all of our digitally available courses and all these inner topics. Okay, if there's any last questions, I'm happy to talk. I'm seeing some nice comments here.
Yes, Gary, thank you for that session and the practice as well. All of those I see, all the thank yous coming there. We will finish with the Shanti Mantra and then just announce tomorrow's event and then